The average person has over a dozen online accounts, email, Facebook, banking accounts, PayPal. And as we become more comfortable with technology, we tend to transfer more of our offline assets and personalities to online media. For example, music, games, and photographs. What happens to your online accounts and media when you die? Joining us to talk about your online legacy is Bob Marterstock. He's a certified financial planner, estate planner. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
And Chris Boutz-Faubert, Cape Cod Times tech columnist. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
All right, so most of us have a will or trust set up, Bob, to handle assets once we die, but many of us haven't even thought about online assets.
Exactly, and as you mentioned in the introduction, we have lots of accounts that are online accounts. I have banking, investments, many other accounts, pictures, music, and there's no clear way to pass that on to a beneficiary under current law. It just, you don't really know what's going to happen to it. And so there's a lot of concern right now for creating laws that address these issues. Only five states have any laws at all that identify what happens to your estate digitally after you die.
And Chris, the online accounts a person can have. I mean, I hadn't even thought about it till earlier when Bob said, I have 20. I go, I don't think I have that many. But then I start thinking, well, yeah, I do have a few that I hadn't even thought about. The average person has a dozen accounts, and we tend to think, not me. So we have email. You might have multiple ones, right? You have online banking.
And the younger set can have accounts that you're not even aware that they have. I don't know the details, but there was a news piece that had circulated last year about a young gamer who died in a car accident down south, and the family didn't have enough money to bury him. And his friend said, well, why don't you sell off his armor and weapons from World of Warcraft?
And they're like, what?
Yeah. But I guess with the friend's help, that's what they did. And they ended up pretty much paying the costs of a funeral from digital goods. Yeah. From that game.
That's amazing. And this is one of the things, I guess, and Chris, I think you had an article not too long ago where you helped a woman who didn't know her husband's passwords.
Right.
That's a nightmare.
Well, it is, and it continues to be, because the terms of service agreements that you signed are draconian and are not designed to be in the best interest of the consumer, but rather of the provider of the service. And so one of the areas that they're hanky about is providing login credentials. They won't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so customer service isn't going to help you.
No.
As I saw on a PBS show not too long ago, there was a family who's, unfortunately, their son had committed suicide, and he had a Facebook account, and they wanted to get access to his Facebook account so they could get some idea why he committed suicide. Facebook wouldn't allow them to do that under the Stored Communications Act, which states that each individual has privacy, even if they're a minor. So,
and this is, I mean, we're talking with kids. I mean, these are sometimes teenagers.
He's 15 or 16 years old, and his parents didn't have access to his accounts because they weren't labeled as friends.
Yeah. That's unbelievable.
Well, Facebook itself didn't deal with death at all for years as the service became popular, and then it took one of their own people dying for them to realize what kind of impact that would have on the Facebook community, which was when they implemented the memorialization.
Yeah, tell us about that, because that's one of the questions I have for you. Tell us what that experience was for them.
Well, they had one of their, I believe, lead designers was killed in a traffic accident, and he was a very popular member of their team. And what ended up happening was the people at work, you know, were posting to his page, to his wall, comments about how they're going to miss him and everything. And then apparently someone had one of those gee whiz ideas. Well, you know, I bet regular people would like to be able to do that too. And so they sat down and said, well, we have to address this, because just because someone dies doesn't mean they leave our community. And so the compromise that they came up with was that friends or family could contact them to notify them of the death. And then if it checked out, they would memorialize the page, which basically, I guess, locks access to it, but retains its content and allows the anyone who's a friend to post messages. But, of course, that wouldn't have helped in the case of the parents of that child,
right,
because
right.
they weren't friends.
They weren't friends,
no,
yeah.
They weren't listed.
And how many teenagers want their parents as friends on a Facebook page? Not many, I would imagine.
Well, I think that's a good question, too, is I can understand why the Privacy Act might stand because perhaps they don't want their family to know what they said right. in their Facebook account. And when they're gone, what can they do about it?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up that point. The act that the services are using as justification for denying access isn't, it was never intended to do that. Mm-hmm. It was created to protect stored email.
Right.
These services didn't exist when that act was created.
Right. I think we need an update. We need somebody in Congress to update that act, don't we?
Well, as I mentioned earlier to Mindy, there is an article in a paper in Staten Island last week. There's a Staten Island assemblyman who's trying to get a bill in New York to deal with your digital afterlife. And he said in his article that more than 30 million Facebook accounts currently belong to dead people.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. 30 million.
That's amazing. Well, now some of these accounts that we have really have valuable information, social security numbers, credit card numbers, and then, of course, the Facebook or online photo albums have sentimental things, you know, the photographs and things that family members would want to have. So what can you do to make sure your online assets are available to your family once you're gone? Is there anything you can do?
Well, one of the things I was fooling around with my Facebook account yesterday, and you can archive your Facebook account. And you can do that with Twitter accounts and some other accounts. You can occasionally download your material by archiving it. So I did that on Facebook yesterday. I haven't accessed it yet to see what's actually in there, but it's now archived on my computer, the information that I have on Facebook.
Okay, and that includes... So for what you have up to date now... Is archived on
I
your
computer. I downloaded that and archived it.
So so your family would have access to your computer and be able to see that.
Right. As long as I tell them where it is.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't want to change the subject, but the situation with online possessions is changing. It is evolving slowly, so a lot slower, I think, than most people would like it to. We're seeing a lot more... consideration being shown to the survivors of customers who die. But to answer that question, I think that despite the fact that, for instance, Google has put together
the inactive account.
Right. Mm-hmm. An manager. Option for you to distribute your possessions after death or incapacity. I think that it's wisest if you prepare a separate almost digital will with all of your login credentials and keep it updated and make sure that at least one of your loved ones knows where it is so that
critical,
you know, especially if you make money online.
Right.
Critical.
Right. Well, and Bob, we've talked about the offline assets many times on this program with you. But this is something people need to consider like he's saying, a will of your online.
Well, most of us keep track of where our investment accounts are, our bank accounts, and keep that all available on a piece of paper. But how many of us have created a listing of all the accounts that we use online, the usernames, the passwords, and identify a beneficiary? Mm-hmm. That's something I've been reading in a book recently called My Digital Afterlife, which is a fascinating book in this area. It's important there's two things you need to do. One is to name a beneficiary for those assets and name someone to be your digital administrator, someone that you give the authority to contact those beneficiaries to make sure they understand that they're going to receive those accounts and whatever they are. And there's ways to do that either on paper. I've created a spreadsheet for my friends and clients to do that. And you can do it online. I recently set up an account on something called LegacyLocker.com, which gives you a place to enter all your username, password, the account, what it is, and a beneficiary for each of your accounts. And they can be different beneficiaries for different accounts. And another interesting part of it is you can also leave letters in there to go to friends and coworkers when you die that Legacy Locker will send out to them via email.
Once that happens, Sam. We're talking about a virtual legacy. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you'd like to join our conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. I just want to say I'm sure there are some folks who are like me. I'm like a dinosaur with some of this technology. And I'm sure there's some other people listening going, I don't even understand a lot. I don't understand. You know, I might have a Facebook account because I want to be talking to the grandkids. And they may not. It's very confusing. There's right. just so much out there. And yeah, it's changing all the time.
You own more than your account. So when we were preparing to come in today to do this show, I sat down last night and I made a list of all of the digital assets that I own. And you would, I think, be surprised at what you own. I own over 200 ebooks.
Wow.
I own 35 movies. I own something like 120 video games that are online digital property.
Digital assets.
Yeah. You know, and this is, when we added it up, we were shocked. I mean, we're talking about, you know, $15,000 worth of digital property. Mm. And you pick it up a dribs and drabs here and there.
Yeah.
But most people, I think, would find if they looked at what they actually possess online, it's more than they think.
And as you mentioned with younger people, I hadn't even thought about that. But this family you're talking about who didn't have money to bury their son, and he had this whole online thing with the games that they buy these things and sell and trade. And, I mean, that isn't something that would ever even cross my mind.
Well, I think the parents were lucky that the friends were paying attention, I think. But yeah, it's there are ways to monetize the things we do for fun online.
Yeah. So what about password programs such as LastPass that store all your log information? I guess that's kind of what you're talking about with the legacy thing. You just need a master password to get in. Are these services helpful? And how do you know which ones you can trust and which ones you can't?
Well, I guess when I started putting my information in Legacy Locker, I said, well, gee, I hope I don't outlive Legacy Locker.
Right. Yes, right.
It's hard to say now how long these organizations will survive. I mean, another alternative is to – and I was reading what an estate planning attorney recommended. You put all your passwords on a thumb drive, and you lock it away in a safe. And
that's not a bad idea.
That's another option. But the key there is you got to update it.
Right.
You can't just put away forever. You got to
because
I mean, if you don't remember your password, then you got to come in and change it again, and then you got to keep track of the changes. And so that's an option. And the other is use an option like one of the cloud services to save it.
That is one of my next question here is about saving your information in the cloud. And I want to describe what the cloud is for people that are going, what the heck is the cloud? First time I heard about it, I was like, what is this cloud?
It's an extension of storage capability to distant services. But I don't use it.
Now, why don't you use it?
Because the EULA and Terms of Service Agreements are not written to benefit me. Mm-hmm. If you actually read some of them, some of the earlier cloud services, it stated that any photographs you stored became the property of that company to use. They could use it in advertising. They could use it any way they wanted to.
Wow.
So I don't use them.
Yeah.
But
for some people?
You know, some businesses, they're a godsend because it allows for sharing data and for backing data up pretty much on the fly.
Yeah. I guess I'm the eternal optimist because I use the cloud. I use Dropbox, which is a type of cloud that I can access any of my devices. I can access Dropbox, and I keep in there documents and other information that I want to be able to access from different places. So I use the Dropbox. But there are also services like I keep my financial information with a firm in Connecticut, and they have something called Wealth Vision, where you can a very elaborate process of clarifying who you are, you can go into the vault and save copies of your wills, your trusts, and other documents. And I think you'll find more and more financial advisors will provide these kinds of services to their clients.
Yeah. So I guess the bottom line here, Chris, what you're saying is read what you're agreeing to.
Absolutely.
And sometimes we just click that accept and we haven't really read it. You really want to read what you're agreeing to.
Well, the general response of most users is, I don't have a choice anyway. If I don't say yes, I won't be able to use this great service. So,
you
know, and as far as reading it goes.
And they're usually like 20 pages long.
Exactly.
And very fine print.
Yeah.
Well, how many of them, Chris, actually make some reference to death in the agreement of service? Do you know of any?
Until recently, none.
Yeah.
It boggles the mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, now it's changing. Some services are putting in specific clauses, for instance, that say if you designate an heir You designate a person that's authorized to access your account and you provide them with your credentials. Then their accessing your account doesn't violate the terms of service. But any other circumstances in which it happens, for instance, the parents of that kid, well, they were violating the terms of service. They weren't authorized to do what they were doing. So these sites, these companies feel that they're fully justified. I think that I don't mean to monopolize the conversation.
No, go. Yeah.
But I think that one of the things that we forget a lot is that the world's only fair when you're playing on a fair playing field. And when corporate – don't get me wrong. I'm not a conspiracy theorist or an anti-corporate person. But corporations don't make decisions in your best interest. That's not what they're in business to do.
Yeah.
In business to make money, right?
So you should be reading what you're signing because, believe it or not, that's a legal document.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're agreeing to those terms. And if you violate them, you could be liable to whatever punitive conditions are placed in that document. Mm-hmm. So it might be a good idea to know what they are.
More mm-hmm. complications. Well, and each of these service providers, Google, Yahoo, Facebook, Twitter, they all have different policies for how to handle a deceased person's account, if they have a policy at all. So this can really get complicated if you're not really prepared.
I think Google was the first one, and oftentimes Google is the first one, in any area, to come up with the inactive account manager. And I went through that and filled that out a few weeks ago. But you can identify if you have not accessed the account within a certain period of time. You can select 3 months, 6 months, or whatever period of time. Your account will become inactive, and you can identify a person who can receive information in your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only one that I know of so far that has addressed this issue.
But you should emphasize that particular solution doesn't just cover Google. It covers all of the companies that Google owns, including YouTube.
Right.
And
they
others.
Own a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, when you set that up, you're taking care of a big chunk of your mm-hmm. online
right.
assets.
That's
right.
good to know.
Yeah.
All right, so estate planning is something many of us put off, but the truth is death can happen suddenly and unexpectedly, and we really should have a plan in place for all our assets, regardless of our age, right?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I mean, unfortunately, you never know what's going to happen. And again, it's imperative that everyone put together a list of all their assets wherever they are and how to access them and make them available and to specify who those assets are to go to. Well, many of us don't even think of those things, but it's important that we make sure that everyone knows who is to get what and when.
Right. We're talking about your online legacy with Bob Mauderstock, Certified Financial Planner, and Chris Boats-Faubert, Cape Cod Times tech columnist. Our toll-free number, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. And Chris, for gamers, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, who spend a lot of money on gaming software, we should mention that Microsoft has done what they've done about digital assets since they own Xbox. What have they done?
Well, I need to qualify this by saying that there's no proof yet.
Okay.
But it seems the trend is now moving towards the online distribution of games and software as opposed to physical distribution. I think we're going to see a lot of companies, Microsoft in particular, moving away from boxed retail mm-hmm. copies of games. And that's actually a bad thing if you think about it, because it reduces the value that the game has for you as the consumer, because you can't turn around and sell the game when you're done with it,
right.
Which is, I think, precisely why they're doing it. They've been looking for years for a way to get a piece of the used game market, and I think they've just found it.
Yeah. It's interesting because my daughter just came. She has piles of these games, and she said, well, I don't play these, and I think I'm going to sell these. These are probably worth, you know, $10 a piece or something. I'm like, man, she's got at least a couple $100 there. And
easily.
Just in the small pile that
easily.
I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that will be gone.
Well, I'd say probably with the next generation of video game consoles. Xbox is about to release its new console this year, and I think Sony is too.
Wow. All right, another aspect of your virtual identity, all that personal information, passwords, pictures, as we mentioned, stored on smartphones, tablets, and computers. We may assume those devices are wiped clean either by us or the company, but oftentimes that isn't the case, right? So how do
right.
you make sure that your devices, you know, if you've get it passing on this computer or this phone or tablet?
Chris, I think you wrote an article to that.
I did.
Right.
It's a issue that has jumped up and bitten more than a few people to have. And you wouldn't think it would be that big of a deal. But you don't think about the fact that someone who has bored might just decide to start calling all the people in your contacts list to ask about you.
Right.
So, and if you happen to have something compromising stored on that phone, a photo, you know, something that's harmless in your world, but not something you'd want to share with the rest of your world, then it's something to consider. But the issue with that is really on the consumer. Mm-hmm. What I recommend they do is read the manual, because there are in the manual the steps to reset the device to what's called factory default settings are clearly printed. And if they just did that alone and, of course, pulled any memory cards out, retain those. Right. The GSM SIM and any secondary memory cards that the phone uses, take them out before you sell it. Mm-hmm. Because that type of thing, those phones were not set up to scramble. Which means that all I'd need is a simple set of tools I can download online, and I can reverse any deletions on that media.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is incredible.
Another aspect of our virtual identity, public records. On the Cape and Islands, court reports are posted online. So if someone's doing a search of your name and you're in the court record for a traffic stop or a DUI, it's going to show up. You can't remove it, but you can do things to minimize where it – so it doesn't show up at the top of the page, right?
Yes, you can. Web search, the World Wide Web is a structure. It's a system of systems. And the web searching that's part of it uses criteria based on the value or density of words. And so your name combined with – and they do give a high density to words like
arrested.
But so that's going to pop right up at the top if there's nothing else to combat it with. Now, I had a I did a consultation back in the days when I did network security, and it was just such a situation where the gentleman wanted that information buried, and there was no way to go to the public safety office and say take it down.
They're
so
not gonna do that,
what we ended up doing was sitting down and doing an assessment of his personality to find out what his hobbies were, and then we paid a publicist to generate 10,000 pages of information on that hobby. Original, copyrightable information that he then put on three different sites that used his name as the primary search key. And so when you went to search for him, what you saw was 10,000 pages of model boating.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were persistent, you could get to that.
But you'd have to go – and most people don't go beyond that first page
first
of search.
Page,
so
right.
you'd
right.
have to go farther down into the other pages.
I think we counted it was like 500 pages.
Yeah, and the other thing, the other thing I think you need to think of too is if you're in that situation – don't keep hitting on that, right? I mean, the more hits you have on it, the more it goes to the top.
Right.
So you want to not hit on it.
Google uses a relevancy system. So if everyone is searching for Selena Gomez fell down drunk, then anytime you search Selena Gomez fell down drunk is going to be one of the first things that pops
show up first.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's probably valuable for each of us to Google our names and see what shows up.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, every once in a while, I think you have to do that because you might be surprised. Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's some really old photographs that I didn't even know existed. You know, people, I guess, repost things or, you know, things that weren't, you know, even that were before we even had online.
Or positions you held at former organizations and so forth that are all there, or articles you've written or where you appeared in the paper. It's all there.
Yeah.
Now, it's a cautionary tale, but none of that goes away, ever.
Right.
Right.
I mean,
right.
And it's not just the Wayback Machine, which is the Internet Information Archive that literally snaps a photo of every website ever created every 2 weeks. And you can go onto that and go back in time and see. It's interesting, and I recommend that you do it. But you can see what the web was like in 1997. And it was a very different web, believe me.
Very different place.
Well, this is the other thing, too, I think, that young people sometimes don't really think about is, you know, what they put up on their Facebook pages and, you know, the social media. And now they've got this thing, Tumblr, and you probably know. Is it photos? But they put these things up there, and then they don't understand, why didn't I get that job or why didn't I get into that college? And we do. You know, you Google and you see what, you know, you look at this person's Facebook page to try to get a better idea of what their personalities are like, and that can really come back to haunt you.
Well, isn't it true? I've heard of situations where potential employers have asked to access to Facebook accounts of their new employees.
Ask, demand.
Demand.
Yeah. Demand. They won't even give you your initial interview until you turn over your credentials. You're seeing a lot of that in the UK, but then they have a more information-intense state there anyway. Mm-hmm. But you are seeing that crop up here too. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily in small business, but in the corporate culture.
So therefore, I mean, you have to be really careful. What am I putting on Facebook, mm-hmm. and who's going to see it someday?
Right. Well, I'm dealing with that now with my kids. And, you know, the advice that I would give anyone, either themselves or for their kids, the same advice I give my kids. Look, you need to think about what you're saying. And if that's not something that you would stand up and shout in church, it's not something you should be putting online.
Exactly.
Right. If you don't want your parents to see it, they may not be your friends, but they could eventually see it as well.
And there's been a lot of people who've gotten in trouble with their 140-character Twitter comments.
Right.
Oh.
Okay.
That's gotta love that.
That's a whole other thing. Yeah. So since I've got you here, Chris, looking ahead, I mean, Facebook seems like it's here to stay. You know, you hear these things, some are trends, some are not. I mean, MySpace doesn't seem to be as big as it once was. What do you see going forward as all of this is you know, constantly changing?
Well, I try to remind, I do community talks sometimes when I get invited to talk to groups for different subjects. And one of the conversational topics that always comes up is that question. Mm-hmm. And I try to remind people that, you know, these sites that you're going on that are free aren't free. Because if you're not paying to access them, that means you're the product.
Mm.
So mm-hmm. when you look at Facebook, the reason that it came out ahead and on top of the heap has a lot more to do with the fact that it's marketing you and making money from you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The other services that have gone the wayside, they didn't do that.
Yeah.
They tried to use advertising models. They tried to sell products, and that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not intensely marketing every aspect of the digital goods, as it were, I don't like thinking of people as digital goods, but I mean, really, mm-hmm. when you come right down to it, sites like Twitter and sites like Facebook, that's what we are. I understand Twitter is considering offering a subscription-based database searching engine that will allow you to read all, do a context-sensitive search for all keywords to read all the tweets that you might have done going back years.
Wow.
So even that's not going to go away.
So think about what you're doing here, and as we're saying, start thinking about a digital estate plan as well. Chris Boutz-Faubert, Cape Cod Times tech columnist, and Bob Mutterstock, certified financial planner. Thank you both. Really helpful information this morning. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mindy. Enjoyed it.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point, WCAI. Amy Vince produces The Point. Mindy Todd is executive producer. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.